And welcome back to The Full Story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. We ask for your emails and we ask for your voicemails. Listener David from Connecticut wrote to say, I vote for legalization in Connecticut and New York. Monty listened to our show that we did last week with Oz Griebel, who is running for governor. And it was about also how to fix Connecticut. And Monty said, now that we have a new governor, he should do two things. Toll I-95 and I-84, also legalize pot. We need revenue. And we also got a voicemail from Susan.
Hello, this is Susan from New Haven. I support the legalization of marijuana in Connecticut, both for the reduction of crime and for the tax, for increasing our tax base. Thank you very much.
We want to know what you think. Call us, 833-CALL-TFS. Email tfs@wshu.org. Tweet at FullStoryWSHU. Matt Simon is still with us. He is the New England political director for the Marijuana Policy Project. Matt, is there much of a difference between smoking a joint and having a beer?
Well, I think, certainly there is a difference, but the difference in terms of harm to the consumer and harm to society, if anything, it's clear that cannabis is objectively less harmful than alcohol. And as Sam said before the break, most of us who are advocates for marijuana legalization and regulation are not arguing that it's entirely harmless. We're arguing that the harms have been blown out of proportion over decades of prohibition, propaganda telling people that it would make them crazy or violent, or and that it was a much more harmful substance than currently legal drugs. And as people learn that it's less harmful than alcohol and tobacco, they say, why shouldn't it be legal? As a society, we've drawn the line at alcohol. Cannabis is clearly on the safer side of that line, so it should be legal, and the harms that it is associated with should be dealt with in a regulated environment.
Dr. D'Souza, is there much of a difference between marijuana and alcohol?
I guess it depends what you mean, but I'd like to address a comment that one of the earlier speakers made. I think if you look at the top 10 causes of and most expensive, the burdens of disease worldwide, alcohol-related problems and tobacco-related problems are in that list of the top 10. So I'm not sure I completely buy that argument. That said, if you're asking whether marijuana is more addictive than alcohol, probably not. Is it as addictive as nicotine? Probably not. But we are seeing that with more potent forms of cannabis and cannabis-related products that are becoming available, it's only likely that we are going to see more people addicted to cannabis than we previously saw. In fact, there are studies that have tried to project the number of new cases of cannabis use disorder. And it looks like we should that currently, in the current data that's available, about 2.5% of adults over the age of 18, that represents 5.9 million people, were diagnosed with a cannabis use disorder. And of course, that's greatest in the age range of 18 to 29. And that also happens to be a time when the brain is still developing. And that those numbers are projected to increase substantially once cannabis becomes legalized. I think we just need to make sure that we are, we have enough checks and balances in place. If we're going to legalize, then we need to have new treatments. We need to have treatment facilities that specialize in treating people with cannabis use disorder. We also need to take into account I think if you talk to most experts, they say people with serious psychiatric disorders, this is going to have an extremely negative impact. And furthermore, I think going back to the point that Bo made earlier, my concern is also around kids. And even though people may say, both the previous speakers have said, that that there's an age limit, we know that with tobacco. We know with alcohol that even though there is an age limit, there are kids who are drinking, there are kids who are smoking, and there are kids who are drinking and driving and getting into a lot of trouble. So it's going to trickle down whether we have great laws in place or not. I think we just need to be prepared for the those negative consequences.
Elise Bergio is joining us now on The Full Story. Elise is the co-chair of the Committee on Cannabis Law for the New York State Bar Association, and she's joining us to tell us what the status is in New York State. Elise, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Hi, yeah, thank you for having me.
So where does it stand in New York?
Well, we just had a very nice election happen in New York this past election in November, with Governor Cuomo getting reelected, you know, and having a Democratic Senate now. We're a lot more lenient to passing this Marijuana Taxation Regulation Act, probably, I would say, within the next 12 months.
Now this would legalize recreational marijuana in New York State?
Yes, it's the Marijuana Regulation and Taxation Act. That's for adult use in New York.
So anyone over the age of 21?
So there's been a few revisions. Within 2 weeks, they had debated in the Senate and in the House whether it be 21 versus 18. Right now, the most revised has 18. So it'll be public hearings on this bill, though, coming up in the next few weeks. There's actually one in Buffalo, New York, happening next Monday. So these are all things that are kind of on the table about what the appropriate age is for this bill.
You watch the political landscape. What's your read on it? How do you think it will get done within the next year?
Yes. Based on how things went this past few weeks, I absolutely think it'll happen within a year.
And again, your read on 18 or 21?
You know, I think that if we have to make some concessions, makes sense to just do 21. I mean, that would line up with the legal drinking age. And, you know, we'd rather have this bill pass. I don't know if we want to push our luck too much in terms of what the appropriate age would be.
Bo Huhn is with us in the studio. And when you said 18, you had a little bit of a grimace on your face.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's kind of the consensus with most people is they say 18. And you know, it's that kind of, I think, pushes this bill to get more opponents than it would if it were at 21.
Elise, I don't know if you were able to hear a little bit earlier, but Mr. Huhn works with a number of teens in the Guilford area, and one of the things that you've been talking about is that worries you because getting those kids, you think, addicted at that age could cause many problems in the future.
Yeah, absolutely, and it may be harsh of me to say this, but I think this industry is just unbelievably unethical. To be pushing a product that's going to damage our kids and not warn them about it. They want to say not for kids under 18 or 21 or whatever they say, but they don't want to tell you at all about the harm that exists. Matt and Sam have said, yeah, they admit it's not harmless. Yeah, they admit it's addictive. But I doubt that they're willing to warn of the possible adverse effects on memory, on cognition, on motivation, on learning, on IQ, potential causation of schizophrenia, paranoia, birth defects in a developing baby if the mother smokes while she's pregnant. You've got intoxication while you're driving. You've got increased of developing an addiction to other substances, including opiates. All of these things, if they're going to have a bill in New York or a bill in Connecticut, the industry should be, I would have some respect for them if they stood up and said, yeah, this is what it's about. These risks are there. Yeah, kids, these are the things that are going to happen if you use. Be aware those risks are out there. Stay away from it. Then I'd be maybe okay, but that's not what's going on here. We've got it's recreational. It's good for you. It's harmless. Reefer madness. This stuff, it's to me, just disgusting.
Elise, with the bill that is being right now debated in New York State, would any of the money raised go toward substance abuse, education, and so on?
Yes, that's typically the purpose of the tax revenue when it is accumulated. Just to kind of touch base, and I understand completely those concerns, and I think where we've been struggling with this movement, right, of having adult use in the United States is, one, we're already up against a big target on our backs with federal having this as a Schedule I substance. So reluctantly, most companies aren't going to tell you what's wrong with it because they're already being told that it's federally illegal. I think once it is normalized and put into an adult use bill, you're going to see a lot of these studies telling you exactly what they're telling you about alcohol, what they're telling you about cigarettes, what they're telling you about any type of pharmaceutical that's on the market. That, you know, although this is adult use and it's permitted, you know, don't forget that there are harmful effects that can happen with any type of overuse of a drug, any type of, you know, there are effects to anything that you're taking, whether you're ingesting it, smoking it, vaping it. And I think the more that we do to regulate it, the easier it will be to identify those problems.
Elise, I have a question for you and Matt and Sam, and it's a Facebook question. One of our listeners wrote in, and Maria said, how is Colorado doing it, the legalization of marijuana? Perhaps gather their statistics and report. What can you tell us about how it has gone so far in Colorado?
Well, I think that we've had 5 years of data there, and that's the question that policymakers want to know first. What is actually happening in Colorado? When that law first passed, people predicted a lot of some of the things that we've heard today, that teen use would go sharply up, that there would be a negative economic impact, that people wouldn't choose the regulated market. And the reality is that it's actually worked very well. Colorado businesses sold $1 billion worth of cannabis through the retail system in just the first 8 months of this year. That produced $200 million roughly in taxes just in the first 8 months of this year. And those dollars are being spent on the things that Beau is concerned about. They've created a system where they're regulating cannabis for public health. They're labeling and testing the products. They're making sure that it isn't being sold to people under 21. And they're engaged in responsible public education. For years, we've been trying to scare people away from using cannabis. And in Colorado, they've unveiled a much more reality-based approach, encouraging people to wait until they're older, which I hope Beau would agree is a responsible message.
Yeah, Ron, I just want to interject here, if I may interject. The couple of points I want to make. One is that the revenue that Colorado has drained is about 0.8% of its budget. That's a very small amount, and that's number one. Second, to say that this is not affecting kids is really untrue. If you look at data collected from hospitals, the number of cannabis-related hospitalizations amongst youth has increased. The number of school-related cannabis-related detentions and expulsions in school have increased. Motor vehicle accidents have increased. So I think that we need to really present a balanced view of this. It's not all that rosy out there. There are both maybe some things that are going well, but there are also some negative consequences to this. And in fact, one of the reasons why proponents have claimed marijuana should be regulated is to get rid of the black market. My understanding is that in Colorado, the black market for cannabis is thriving because the dealers are selling cannabis at a much lower rate than what the regulated cannabis market is selling it at. There are reports of cannabis clubs promoting the use of cannabis in pregnant women to treat morning sickness. The effects on the developing fetus, these are not good things. So I really think we need to have a balanced view of what the experiment in Colorado is doing. In fact, I would encourage you all to look at the recent article by the Attorney General in Colorado, who summed up their experience with the great cannabis experiment in Colorado.
Elise, can I ask you about New York State and why for many people it seems to be inevitable that this is going to happen in Connecticut and New York? Is the motivating factor in New York money?
Absolutely. I think I can kind of tie in what is happening in Colorado as well. So just to touch base, Colorado is putting a 30% sales tax. Well, combination of a sales tax and the sales tax in cannabis. So it's 15 and 15. The 30% tax is exactly how you're saying it is creating this black market, because you're having this very, very high tax on a product that people are still able to get in the black market. We hope that New York, even though we are generally a very high taxation state, learns from this mistake, because once you have a tax that's high, it does create this ever-growing black market because of the access to it. Now, there's a few ways you can curb that. You can deny this access. You can start being harder on black market businesses, making sure that that's off the market, but that's a little bit harder to monitor. I think the only thing you can really do is kind of grow from that. New York, just like you said, it's driven by money, I think. You're going to start seeing Massachusetts, Canada, New Jersey, if Connecticut does, push theirs through. You have Vermont. All of these surrounding states are having access to adult-use marijuana. And what are people going to do in New York City or on bordering cities like they're doing in the Midwest? They're going over, they're buying their products, and they're coming back into the state. And that's not what you want.
So both,
one, you don't want to lose that money, and two, you don't want to cross state lines.
Bohune, do you feel it's inevitable? You're going to be surrounded. It sounds like New York is going to do it. Obviously, Massachusetts, as I mentioned before, if people get in their cars and if they're going for a vacation up in the Great North, they can go to Canada and buy. Should Connecticut just throw in the towel?
Yeah, no, I'm one of these people who were born optimist. I really think we can stop this in Hartford. I think that the legislators really do care about our kids here, and that as information about Colorado comes across, that's going to lead to it not happening here. And I think this pendulum is going to swing back ultimately. I've got the editorial that was in the Denver Post that came from the U.S. attorney out there. And what he had to say was, now Colorado's youth use marijuana at a rate 85% higher than the national average. Now marijuana-related traffic fatalities are up by 151%. Now 70% of 400 licensed pot shops surveyed recommend that pregnant women use marijuana to treat morning sickness. And now Colorado has a booming black market exploiting our permissive regulatory system. And what it says about revenue is, do they tout Colorado's tax revenue from commercialized marijuana? No, because there's been no net gain. Marijuana's tax revenue adds less than 1% to Colorado's coffers, which is more than washed out by the public health, public safety, and regulatory costs of commercialization. And I think that's what would stop it in Connecticut if legislators think about it and realize that they're going to be left holding the bag of the costs while the entrepreneurs walk off with the profits.
Elise, I know we only had you for a short period of time. I want to thank you for your time. Elise is the co-chair of the Committee on Cannabis Law for the New York State Bar Association. I hope you come back and speak with us in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Elise. When we come back, we will continue with Sam Tracy, Matt Simon, Bohune, and Dr. D'Souza. And once again, if you want to comment about this show or tomorrow's show, which is where we'll be talking about the changing political landscape in Connecticut and New York, we would like to hear from you. Please call us toll-free, 833-CALL-TFS, 833-225-5837. Email us at tfs@wshu.org or tweet @FullStoryWSHU. Short break for us, and we'll be right back.